This is Mitchell's Front Page on 94.7 The Pulse.
And I'm now joined in the studio by Simon Ramsey, who is, of course, the member for Western Victoria Region in the Legislative Council. Good morning to you, Simon. Happy New Year.
Yeah, good morning, Mitch, and Happy New Year to you and your listeners.
Thank you for coming in. You're looking rejuvenated and refreshed.
I am. I've been actually hiding away in New South Wales for a week with no caffeine, no alcohol, no fats, just a good organic vegetable diet. So I've lost a few kilos, done a bit of exercise and feeling good.
Is that one of those health retreats?
It is, and I'm sort of preparing for the Cadell Evans ride on the long weekend, and I haven't done a lot of bike riding, so I thought I'll just take myself away for a week after a long year in politics and rejuvenate, refresh, and come back feeling good about life, and that's what's happened.
Fantastic. Well, looking at this year, of course, it's, I suppose, year two of opposition for you guys. The other, of course, important thing to note is that it's going to be a federal election this year. Does that mean that some of the attention moves away from state politics a bit in the general community?
Well, we'll continue to hold the Andrews government to account, but that's true with a federal election. And obviously with two federal seats in play here in this region, being Corangamite and Corio, we will, as local party members, be supporting our candidates in the field, any way, which way we can. And we expect to see a lot of the media attention drawn to the federal election, federal policies and the candidates' platforms.
Mm, and of course, that means that perhaps some of the heat is moved off state politics for a bit. Do you think that the voters are able to discern between federal and state issues?
Some do, some don't. Certainly in some of the state election commitments and concerns that were raised by the public, there was sort of a cross between federal issues and state issues. So the general public sometimes don't differentiate between state and federal policies and election commitments. But certainly I think we'll see a sort of a broader platform of federal policies being rolled out as the campaign proper starts for this federal election in 2016.
And in terms of your year in opposition, is this where you're developing a lot of the policies that you'll be taking to the 2018 election?
That's true. This is the certainly the second year is the important year to start developing these policies and putting it out there to the public so they can have a think about it, discuss it, and certainly we'll get feedback from the communities about different policy positions that we'll put forward to them in plenty of time prior to the election. So they're very clear what our agenda is going forward to the 2018 election.
Are there any particular areas that you're passionate about or red hot about at the moment?
Well, I'm a Shadow Parliamentary Secretary for Regional Transport, and obviously public transport is a big issue in regional Victoria, both on road and rail. So I've spent quite a lot of time over the last year going around regional Victoria talking with the communities about what they want to see in the future in relation to public transport, transport connections. And we know here in Geelong and Bellarine, in fact, that the change in bus timetables and train timetables has caused confusion and concern amongst communities that aren't familiar with the new timetables. And I'm pleased to see that during the PTV meetings and also the meetings that Andrew Kados and I held over the last year, that there's been significant changes now to those timetables to make them more user-friendly.
Well, as I was saying last year, I think at this station we received more calls about that than any other issue, the fact that people used to be able to get on a bus and go somewhere and now they've got to get on two buses or whatever the case may be. But are you now seeing that that's settling down a bit and people just getting used to the new routes or timetables?
Look, it's getting better, but it's not perfect. And I know the listening posts I've done through the Bellarine clearly demonstrate that those in the St Leonard's area don't have the flexibility in timetables to be able to get from St Leonard's to Drysdale to Geelong in time for work or social commitments. So we'd like to see more flexibility in the timetables to allow people from those outer regions of Bellarine being able to get into the CBD efficiently and be able to meet their commitments.
And on the issue of trains, I read a report about the Ballarat line into Melbourne, and these were commuters that were saying that overcrowding was the worst that they'd seen it since the regional rail link opened. Are we seeing similar problems on the Geelong line with that, or is it only affecting the Ballarat line, to your understanding?
No, my understanding is that it is affecting the Geelong line. I've seen firsthand, certainly the peak hours, where there's still overcrowding on the carriages, and there's not so much the need for more services because they're running every 20 minutes to Southern Cross, but there is need for more carriages, and I think the Andrews government has been lazy in not providing the appropriate carriages for a, you know, a significant peak period carriageway between Melbourne and Geelong. In fact, I'd like to see them be able to use an express lane for commuters from Geelong to Melbourne, perhaps even using the old line rather than the regional rail link line, because I think there is an opportunity to be able to provide premium price commuter fares for those that want to get to Melbourne under 40 minutes. And we'll be investigating that over the next year.
Isn't that old line, though, still affected by the problem of getting stuck behind the metro and the regional, the Melbourne suburban network trains?
It is, but I think we can run a fewer number of express services to Melbourne on that line, and that's something and we'll discuss over the next year and have some discussions with V-Line about what are the options. But certainly we need more carriages, particularly on peak times, and obviously those in the west would like to see the additional service. So as well as providing the carriages, we also need to upgrade the line so we can have enough track to accommodate a fourth and fifth service, particularly to Warrnambool.
I remember under the last government where there were some issues with overcrowding, and we talked about, okay, more carriages, but they said, well, actually, if we put more carriages on, it would exceed the length of some of the platforms that we're going to be stopping at, so we're already chock-a-block. So are you now saying that there are, is there room for more carriages?
I think there is room for more carriages, both on the Ballarat and Geelong lines. We've seen at peak periods some of the Ballarat trains only running three or four carriages where they have capacity to run five. I've seen in Geelong where there's only three or four cars where they have capacity to run five. So I still think there's opportunities to increase the carriages behind the trains and also improve some of the flexibility in timetables and the punctuality. We're still seeing it taking at least 60 minutes to get from Geelong to Melbourne, and in my mind that's unacceptable with the new regional rail link, and also with the current technology we have now available to get us quickly from Geelong to Melbourne.
And in terms of those carriages, are we just seeing them just sitting around doing nothing basically, or do we not have the rolling stock in the first place?
Well, I know there's been contracts given to Bombardier and also Alstom in Ballarat to produce more carriages. We put significant orders in when we were in government, and we had a significant forward plan to roll out carriages over the four-year period. But it's disappointing to see that the allocation of carriages, particularly to these two peak lines, Geelong and Ballarat, haven't been forthcoming in relation to the additional rolling stock.
Now, this morning I was talking about some analysis that was done by the LDP, that's the Liberal Democratic Party, so I'm not sure how reliable it is, but they did the numbers on the new Night Network. This is the public transport service so people can get home on a Saturday night, and I believe they have buses from Melbourne to Geelong. Essentially, they worked out it would cost $200 per head of population that actually uses that service of government money. And as I said, I'm not sure on the veracity of it, but do you support this night public transport service?
Well, the Andrews government gave a commitment to provide the night services, and particularly some of the night rider services, so we expect them to fulfil that commitment. I believe it is a good policy to be able to move people, particularly when other public transport stops, to provide them with a safe carriageway from where they're socially engaged to home, and it is paramount that whatever we can do is to bring those people from those areas, those public spaces, back to their home in relative safety.
I mean, as a layperson, you look at $200 and you say that buys a lot of cab vouchers.
Does. I mean, if the costs are such as what you're suggesting, obviously we need to look at better ways to be more efficient with being able to move people from public places to their home. And certainly I'll be able to, or given the information you've given me, I'll be able to look into that over the next few weeks.
And Uber, with their surge pricing, they've received a bit of criticism on New Year's Eve for charging more than their regular base fares. And of course people are saying, well, you wouldn't get that with the taxi industry, because some people were getting charged 8 or 9 times. What do you think about the concept of surge pricing?
Well, I think it's a disgrace, to be honest. I mean, I've read about this, and I've also investigated some of the pricing, surge pricing, as you said, that Uber are charging. I mean, my understanding is that they surge price even if it's raining or there's some sort of climatic conditions that are affecting the efficiency of the service. Peak times, I mean, in my mind, you know, some people are being billed $200 to $700 per trip, a 10K trip. I'm not sure that they're being totally honest with the public in relation to the service they're providing. So it might be an issue that the ACCC might want to investigate.
I mean, my point is that the app actually says you will be charged 8 times. You have to actually enter the number 8 to acknowledge it. So to me, it just seems like an issue of buyer beware, caveat emptor. But you're saying that there's something else going on?
Well, I think it sounds like many people that use the service are unaware of those significant increase in charges. And I've had first-hand experience where, you know, I was offered during the Christmas period $500 vouchers from Dan Murphy. You might well remember this.
Yes.
And, of course, when I went to accept my voucher, I found I had to ask a whole lot of questions. It took hours and hours and hours, and found the small print that the charge was about $3.40 per minute by the telco carrier. And I'm getting bombarded, like I'm sure many other people are, with all these vouchers and giftaways. It sounds so easy, but it's actually not, and it comes at a cost.
Yeah.
And Uber seems to me that they're overcharging, the surge charging is not being honest to the people that are looking to use that service.
Well, Simon, thank you so much for coming in once again. We really appreciate it, and we'll speak to you in February.
Thanks very much, Mitch, and hope your listeners have a great year this year.
Thank you. I hope they will too. Simon Ramsey there, the member for the Western Victoria region in the Legislative Council.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.